today's edition. What's up with Jim Harbaugh? What's up with Alabama and the transfer portal? They're fleeing Tuscaloosa. Ohio State finds an AD. And we talk about a really old bottle of whiskey.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
This is it. His is vacation. Not only does he stick me with all the work last week, he's sashaying down a mountain. It's now bleeding into this week.
Russ Dellinger.
It's the tether between higher education and major college, high revenue producing sports. It's stretching and stretching and stretching, and it's really become an issue.
And SI's Pat Forty.
It's a rocky start, and these are people that are not accustomed to having this happen, so the reaction will be shrill. Feinbaum meltdown coming.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Ross is back from skiing. We're not going to talk about his vacation either. Didn't let Pat talk about his vacation. I just like to say someone around here doesn't take vacation. He just works. Just works.
Oh, mm-hmm. There mm-hmm. we go.
Grindstone. That's it. Nose, yeah. Grindstone. Mm-hmm. That's it.
No time off for Dan.
None.
Yeah.
It's actually true, which is, the HR sends me little notes saying I should take time off.
Your family my long weekend, with you. That's the problem.
My long weekend vacations are known to happen at the just the best times, really. You know, just thinking of the last few. Nick Saban retires. The Pac-12 completely collapses. Mm. USC and UCLA leave the Pac-12. I mean, all of these happened when I started like a.
Don't think we
a
haven't noticed.
Day, like don't long weekend think, vacation. So
don't think the rest of us who have to pick up the slack haven't noticed.
I don't need to take any more, I guess, you know, because every time it
well,
seems
if you
like,
do, let us know so we can be ready for something.
Prepare, I know.
Some holy crap eventuality.
Yeah. I told the HR lady once, not recently, that people who take vacation at Yahoo get laid off. And she said that wasn't true, but it is. But it is. check the math. Mm-mm-mm. Anyway, speaking of work, Jim Harbaugh's he's trying to get a new job.
Mm.
He's got one job. Maybe he's still doing it while interviewing for other jobs. Who knows? Monday, met with the Chargers. Tuesday, Atlanta Falcons. Falcons also interviewed Bill Belichick.
Yeah, imagine. I think they're serious about getting an upgrade from Arthur Smith here.
Yeah.
Given who they're interviewing.
Can you imagine back-to-back days of interviewing Bill Belichick and then Jim Harbaugh?
It's a lot of brain power, but a lot of eccentricity, too.
Like, put that on the NFL Network rating bonanza. Sell that on the Peacock.
I wonder if they pass each other in the hallway, you know? Do you imagine?
Would they acknowledge each other? I don't think they would.
No, I don't think so. Probably didn't happen, but it would be nice to think about.
What do you ask Bill Belichick on an interview? How do you interview? Bill?
I don't know. I mean, I think I would have one question, basically. Did you have to do that to us in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, that's got to be it, right?
Yeah. Hmm.
Like, hey, Bill, in your last job, were there ever any... seemingly insurmountable challenges that you rallied your guys together to overcome? Well, you know, 28-3 once in a Super Bowl. Maybe you heard about it. Yeah, the Falcons interview. Anyway, Harbaugh interviews could be, this is what I would pay for. Much better than the Peacock.
Oh, yeah.
Charging for games. This is what I want to watch. Unfortunately, they aren't doing that. But I would go for it. So Harbaugh is out searching for employment. At the same time, he is reported yesterday. There's still negotiations ongoing with Michigan or back and forth with Michigan. What are we going to get? Michigan's offered 6 years. Sources at $11.5 million a year plus bonuses. Supposedly he'll make him the highest paid coach in the country. Certainly highest paid in the Big Ten. See if he gets back 10 to 20% of his salary.
Yeah,
it's a lot of salary.
It's only 5 to 10 that he was offering.
Five to ten for players. Okay, yeah. But good money. But he was looking for all sorts of protections on being fired too. So, you know, before we even get to that, we'll get to the contract part, because it's pretty interesting. But sitting here right now, 11:23 a.m. Wednesday, the was it 17th? What do you think? Where's Harbaugh coaching next year, Pat?
I think the NFL. I mean, he's doing multiple interviews. There are impasses, obviously, with Michigan, as you detailed in the story. And I think that if Michigan could have cleared that up before he entered the interview cycle, I would feel stronger about the chances of him coming back to Michigan. But if those impasses remain, I mean, maybe this is all hardball and he does want to stay at Michigan. He's just going to push this for as much as protection as he can get against NCAA sanctions, including the highly unusual request for a 3-member panel to decide part of his situation if it comes to that. But anyway, and if I had to guess, I think things are trending towards the NFL, which would not shock me anyway.
Yeah, it feels like that. I think the NFL as well. And it's felt like that for a while, maybe even before the year even started. I mean, he was in the mix for, we talked about NFL jobs the last couple of years, some that maybe he could have had and he turned down for whatever reason, and some that he wanted and didn't get. It's felt like he's wanted to get back, you know, to the pro league for a little while. And now when you reach the pinnacle of, you know, your sport, I would think this is a perfect time to go and to do the NFL thing. So I'm going to say that he gets an offer from one of these franchises and takes it. But and I think maybe partly he knows that, which is why kind of wisely, you know, he and his agent are negotiating these unusual terms with Michigan, knowing that, you know, well, he might as well get all you can get, right, since you might have some other offers out there and after winning the title. But they are bizarre. And if Michigan grants him, yeah, Pat kind of mentioned this, it kind of like opens the door for others to maybe do it, other coaches and other agents to do it. We saw Jimbo Fisher's first contract, you know, at Texas A&M, the $100 million contract. That started a trend. These things end up starting trends. It'll be interesting to watch how this evolves.
Yeah, I think he'll be in the NFL too. He's never, I mean, this whole process, he never shied away from saying he was going to interview with the NFL. I mean, to his credit, he did not try to play any word salad this time. Now, 2 years ago, he didn't get the Viking job and he said he'd never go back. So I'm not giving him the full honesty award, honest Abe award. But through this process, he said, we're going to find out. And, you know, look, there's 7 jobs open. He's got to get a job. That's the thing. Someone's got to offer him a job that he wants. There's 7 open as we speak. Some of them are very good. Chargers are good. And, you know, actually, there's 6 open right now. I'm sorry. Some of them have been filled. The New England got filled. But, Atlanta, you know, could be pretty good. You still may have Dallas. You still may have Philadelphia. Pittsburgh, we don't know. Seems to be some contention there, but it looks like maybe Mike Tomlin's coming back. But you're getting into some really good situations, not just, hey, you want to coach Carolina and get fired in, you know, middle October of 2025. You know, no. So I think, you know, I don't think there's anything Michigan could have done other than like give him $30 million a year or something that would keep him. I think he wants to coach in the NFL. He wants to look at the NFL. I don't think any of these negotiations really matter. I think he's made that clear. So I don't, you know, obviously Harbaugh's trying to use this to get as much as they possibly can, ride the 15-0 season, the national title. But I don't really know that. I think his heart is like, hey, if I get that Charger offer, I'm taking the Charger offer. But it's got to get the offer, and it's got to be on the right terms. So that's Michigan's bit, and they're, can they create a path back a path to remain that's pretty good, and it certainly seems to be that's what they're trying to work for. But you know, some of this stuff is tricky. I mean, you've got as Pat said, if I could be terminated for cause, it can't be by the athletic director. It's got to be by a 3-person panel, which is traditional, I guess, in the way they for cause fire like university presidents. I think that's a lot about like negotiating a settlement of money. There's I want immunity from these two cases that are going on right now, the advanced scouting and then the cheeseburger one they talk about, which is really just him being less than forthcoming with a series of level 2 violations. He wants, you know, protections against future things. There's a lot of demands there, and I'll get to one of the more interesting ones in a minute, but your thoughts on some of the contract language that he's seeking, Pat?
It's pretty extraordinary. He's got sharp attorneys, so I'm not surprised that he's pushing for some of this. I mean, he's in a position to try to push for as much as he can. You guys have detailed it. He's absolute hero at Michigan, and so you try to get as much protection as you can here in the eventuality of further NCAA sanctions. It is extraordinary and unusual, and counter to the way college athletics has pretty well always handled its business in terms of getting an arbitration panel or something. Okay, that may be the way they do things on the other side of campus, but athletics has often said, well, we do things our own way, and part of that is paying football coaches on a level that nobody on the other side of campus gets paid, and affording them some of the other creature comforts that nobody else gets paid. So you might be trying to play both sides of the coin there. I'm curious, Dan, I mean, you're closer to this, I think, and have good insight into this. Is any of this an indication that A, Ward Manuel may not be around, or B, that Jim Harbaugh doesn't want Ward Manuel deciding his future?
I don't know about that. I don't know. Maybe not. I'm not saying yes or no. I think it's more. I think he's got an agent now as an NFL agent, and they're looking at his representation is different than most college coaches. He's got, as you said, he's very sharp attorneys, and they're looking at these things and saying, well, why would we accept that risk? In practicality, right, we know that, let's say they come out and say Jim Harbaugh is going to get suspended for 6 games next year for not being forthcoming with the NCAA violation. A traditional college coach contract would say if you found you violated a level 1 rule, there's grounds for for cause termination, right? Well, they're sitting there saying, well, why would, and you would go, look, they're not going to fire Jim Harbaugh next fall. Let's say that ruling comes out in May. No one's firing Jim Harbaugh for that. Everyone, this is baked in. He just won the national title. Anybody tries to fire him will get fired because the fans will revolt, all that, right? We would know that Jim Harbaugh is not getting fired. But why have that in the language? So it's right. Sort of like, instead of being, hey, don't worry about it. We ain't firing you. No, we don't care about this thing. You could have bought all the hamburgers. You could have lied to the NCAA. We don't even care about Connor Stallions at this point. You just won the national title. It's like Bill Self's deal, right? Bill Self is a made man. He can't be fired. He's got a lifetime deal, and they don't care what he did. They didn't care what he did before they even proved what he did or didn't do.
True.
So the agents he has, the lawyers he has, say, well, let's get this language out of here. I don't care. I'm not assuming the risk of don't worry. Let's take care of it. And so I think that's really more about it than I'm worried Ward Manuel. What's Ward Manuel do? Fire? And nothing against Ward Manuel. Absolutely nothing against Ward Manuel. What would any AD do?
Right.
What AD could fire a coach that just won a national championship? No. I mean, it's a save like some absolute criminal behavior.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it's not going
to
happen.
No, this goes back to the old Gordon Gee comment about Jim Tressel. I'm worried he might fire me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. That's pretty much it. So I don't know if Harbaugh's quite got that power over Santa Ono, the president of Michigan. I don't think he does. It's a little different situation. But he ain't going to fire anybody. But you're not firing Jim Harbaugh, barring just, and I'm sure, I mean, look, if there is some kind of straight, direct knowledge of Jim Harbaugh to Connor Stallions, or there's, I mean, it hasn't appeared. Nothing even close has appeared. So we're going to guess that it's probably nothing, or it's going to be very, and Harbaugh has had no fear of this thing, right?
Right.
So my guess is he didn't know anything. So, you know, I think it's more that than anything else. Go ahead, Ross.
You know, we've discussed the coaches' contracts quite a bit and all the things that are in them, and talked about how long they go and the guaranteed money and all this stuff. And, you know, all these things are being agreed to by administrators. And this is a good example, these things that Harbaugh is asking for administrators to put the foot down, right, and say, no, we're not. It stops here. Now, that's really easy for me to say. I'm not in Ward Manuel or Santa Ono's shoes. You know, I saw the replies to the tweet with the news yesterday, and or the day before, and you know, a lot of them are give the man whatever he wants, right? I mean, that's the the sentiment among fans, and that's what pushes administrators into agreeing to some of these deals. You know, I was at a night commission hearing in the fall and ended up writing a story. We talked about it in the pod. Damon Evans was there, the Maryland athletic director, and he was just really like blunt and honest about the future of college athletics. And one thing I really didn't write about, but kind of have saved, filed away, was he just kind of went off about administrators basically being, you know, agreeing to some of these deals. He said, you know, when we all get together as administrators in a room, you know, we say one thing, and then when we get back to our schools and our campuses, we do another. And oftentimes we do another because we walk into a board meeting and there are, you know, four of our eight top donors. And when they suggest something, we think about, I think he said something like, you know, we're thinking about our jobs, in our job security, and we go along with it. And we've seen that quite a bit the last few years. And I'm going to assume, you know, Ward Manuel wants to keep his job. And so we may, if Harbaugh doesn't go to the NFL, we may see this again, right? We may see boards and administrators decide to kind of start a new trend of coaching contracts with all these stipulations in it.
I think we're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute regarding a certain administrator who's just gotten a new job. But I did want to follow up the briefly about the strict liability rule. Yeah,
that's in the big NCAA. On this.
Yeah. You know, which says the head coach is not just, you know, held responsible, but will be charged at the same level as the school, which means if Connor Stallions' violations are deemed level one, Jim Harbaugh's facing another level one violation. And then you got two of them, and then does that exacerbate the penalties? And, you know, Dan, I think you've mentioned before that seems like a bad rule for coaches to ever agreed to. And what would be Michigan's pushback, or Harbaugh's particular pushback, if this gets applied to him? In the Stallions case.
Well, and that's part of what's out there in these negotiations. And I think this will be the trend going forward. If Harbaugh gets this, or the fact that you've brought this up, I would think almost every coach in the country is going to go along with this, is going to try to push for this. So, as you said, the strict liability going forward, anyone on your staff commits a level one violation, the head coach is now also getting a level one violation. There's a, let's take Connor Stallions kind of thing out of it, but there's 100 people working for a program. You now have a $10 million a year job or whatever, your career on the line, hoping that 100 people follow all the rules to a T. And I get the idea of the strict liability. It was ridiculous how often, particularly in basketball, the head coach had his associate head coach was doing everything and the head coach didn't know anything. But in practicality, you sit there and go, well, I'm Jim Harbaugh. I didn't know anything that this guy was doing. And now I get hit with a level one. Well, if I get hit with a level one, it says in this contract, I could be terminated for cause. So what he's seeking, one of the things that they're, you know, and I don't know all the where it's at or the precise language, but is if the is they called it a matrix. It's like a list of fines, like a menu.
Yeah.
You can't penalty fire matrix. Me. You can't fire me, but you can fine me. This would be the penalty if we're hit with level one, level two, whatever it is. So the NCAA has come up with the strict liability on the coaches, and the coaches are going to seek contractual protection to say, that's a bunch of crap. That's not applying to me. I'm not getting fired because the assistant defensive back gave some extra money to someone to drive some recruits up on campus. Or when I wasn't looking, in the weight room, two position coaches went in there, and, you know, that type of stuff that leads to. So the NCAA is trying to get strict liability. And I think Harbaugh quite smartly. And I think every coach, if I was a coach, I'd want this too. Cause I'd be like, this is terrifying. I don't know what the hell everybody's doing. You can't expect me to have everybody strict 100% compliance with 100 people. Good luck. Year after year after year. Nice ideal. But people screw up. I'm sure he doesn't, you know, I mean, we see it, you know, any organization. So they're trying to circumvent that and say, yeah, the NCAA might say I'm liable, but we're going to write in this contract that I'm not. And you can't fire me for that. And so I think that's going to be the trend in contracts going forward. And I don't blame the coaches for doing that, because this is it's just not a practical rule, I don't think.
To whom much is given, much is expected. $11 million and be the king.
But how do you do it?
Castle.
I get it. I mean, whatever. I'm not crying these guys. There's worse injustices, okay? I'm not saying that, yeah. But how we've all worked in media organizations, right?
Yeah.
And some reporter, this one was doing this. This one was doing that. They get fired. You're like, I didn't know anything about it. I'm not there. Like, they're supervised. If you're cheating, you keep it small, right?
Mm.
So much is given. You're making $11.5 million. You got to deal with that consequence. But I can see where that'd be the first thing. I'd be like, hey man, I get fired for these things. This contract says I can be fired. I can lose all the money if somebody over here does something. I just want protection to say, look, I'll give you $1 million back, but I ain't losing my job.
Yeah. No, I mean, if I'm a coach agent, I'm absolutely trying to fight that battle for sure. It's an interesting one. We have yet to see the strict liability standard actually applied. So stay tuned on that.
I mean, I think that when you have new, it's like fresh eyes on these college contracts with Harbaugh's reps.
Yeah.
And I can imagine Don Yee, who's generally does NFL, was like, what is this? Because if he signs with the Chargers, right, and somebody on the staff does something, it doesn't mean you could be fired. I presume. I've never seen an NFL coaching contract because they're not public. But, or one guy can't fire you. You know, it's just a lot of this goes to the basic problem, but the nonsensical nature of having a school have effectively a professional football team attached.
Yes. Yes. That's the ultimate that's right. Bottom line.
Robert Kraft can do whatever he want, right?
Yeah.
Higher education. I don't care what Bill Belichick did. I ain't firing anybody, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't, we're not doing that.
But Chiefs were not going to hold Andy Reid responsible for what his son did.
Right. Right. Mm.
It's the tether between higher education and major college, high revenue producing sports. It's stretching and stretching and stretching. And it's really become an issue, and it's become an issue because of the amount of money involved. You know, that's why we're here. That's why tomorrow on Thursday I'll attend another congressional hearing. I mean, it's the issue right now. Yep. Is the money involved in college sports and where it goes, and in the fact that there's an attachment, you know, to academia, which I think all of us in a way cherish, I guess you could say, is that attachment, but it also creates real issues, and we're seeing them.
Just doesn't fit, you know. But if you're Harbaugh or his attorneys and you say we're about to, let's say we agree to a $60 million something dollar deal with Michigan, our two goals is to get the most money and then protect it and get as much of it as we possibly can. You know, same way in any other business deal. So it is, it'll be interesting to see what happens if he does come back to Michigan, what this contract includes, because all of it makes sense in some ways. And yeah, I don't know. It's a push and pull. And he sit there and go, well, we'll do it for Harbaugh. But then all of a sudden every other coach wants it, you know, and it's like, well, you know, is there special? It's tricky and easy being a college. Ward Manuel don't have it easy. None of them do. All right. Nick Saban has left Alabama. You might have heard. I don't know.
What?
Yes.
Is that what happened when I was skiing?
Did it reach your vacation?
No, it happened the day before. Thankfully, at least they made a hire quickly and before I actually physically hit the slopes. But I
forgot how many stories I had to write because you were on vacation.
Yeah, I know.
Some
right?
of us work. Yeah. Some of us care about the company and all that. But you know, that's it. Nick Saban doesn't take vacation. He went that one time to Italy, discovered Italy.
Regretted it probably.
Remember? He was
It's
great over
the
here.
Ferrari plant.
Yeah,
yeah, never, right. Yeah. He was recommending it to people.
He was recommending
that was
Italy.
Hilarious.
That was one of his all time great. Yeah, never heard of Italy.
Who knew?
Italy is a great place. Yeah,
architecture, food, fashion. It's an incredible place. Yeah,
wait till you're this little hideaway.
This is going to be great. Italy. He's going to be like, I just Paris. It's the man knew nothing more than you know, 7-on-7 tournaments, his lake house in Georgia, and Destin, Florida. That was it. I think growing up, he vacationed behind a cement factory and. Boardman, Ohio or something. Anyway, he's got plenty of time now. Alabama football program is experiencing a new reality. 27 transfers since the end of the regular season, 21 since losing the Rose Bowl, and that is at 11:46. We'll see what happens the rest of the day. It includes Caleb Downs just earlier today, Wednesday. Led a freshman All-American, led the team in tackles, had a couple interceptions. They were saying he's the best cornerback there since Micah Fitzpatrick, which is, you know, incredible. Isaiah Bond, the receiver, went to Texas. Dez Ricks went to FSU has taken 5 kids from the Alabama roster. They're losing good talent. Like, everyone else is picking them apart. 6 high school recruits have decommitted. Needless to say, they're all really good. Alabama doesn't take 2 stars. Alabama will be okay. Kalen DeBoer, this is kind of expected. But this is not the kind of thing that happened when Nick Saban was there, because you went there to play for Nick Saban and you bided your time and you ended up, you said, look, you're not going to play as a freshman or this or that. You just stick with the plan. You're going to be a first-round draft pick if you deserve it. Now these guys are all of a sudden saying they're willing to head other places. Pat, either tell our listeners in Alabama that it's going to be okay or just forget. Like, what panic meter is – it's a tough time down there. They're not used to this.
Can I just go back to the vacation behind the cement factory in Boardman, Ohio for a second?
Sure.
Oh, you just painted such a rosy picture of life on the West Virginia-Ohio border there.
Steubenville. Oh, I went to Steubenville. I had to cover a trial once in Steubenville for a week. It was a great place. Gritty. It's where Deer Hunter was in Weirton, West Virginia.
Yes.
They filmed Deer Hunter. I think I went to tried to find the
one
bar.
One of the grimmest movies of all time.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I love it. Me and Saban, I'm fine with it. We're going to Boardman. I'll load the kids in the car. Let's go to Boardman.
Let's go. Load up the station wagon. We're going to the cement factory. Oh, my God. That's a Wetzel classic. Anyway, back to your point.
It's probably closed. That's the problem. Don't even understand.
They don't even do cement there anymore. probably just meth. No, the Alabama is now experiencing how the rest of the country lives. So thoughts and prayers with the folks there, but this is what happens. You lose a coach, you lose a lot. And that's the way it is. We talked about this in the last episode. Don't blame the players for playing the same game as the coaches. You get an opportunity to move. When things fall apart, you move. And, I mean, these are huge names. Caleb Downs is like the best freshman football player in the country this last year. An absolute star. Isaiah Bond was outstanding. And you're going down the line. It is interesting. Five guys from Alabama to Florida State. I keep remembering where Florida State can't compete. They can't compete. They don't have enough money. But they somehow kept their coach, and now they're getting players from Alabama. I don't get it, but what a miracle. Congratulations in Tallahassee. Now, it's pretty startling to see, and I do think Kalen DeBoer is going to be okay there. But, man, it's a rocky start, and these are people that are not accustomed to having this happen, so the reaction will be shrill. Feinbaum meltdown coming.
Yeah, I think Caleb Downs had the most tackles of any Alabama freshman ever, I want to say, or at least maybe the first freshman to ever lead the team in tackles. Either way, it was impressive, and I was looking at some of the reaction to the news this morning. Well, first of all, did you guys see who broke the news? Because it might be an indication of where Caleb Downs may go next. The news was broken by a Georgia recruiting reporter.
He is from Georgia.
Which I think 24/7 followed up with some more reporting around where he could end up in Georgia being the top school. But you don't have to look far and dig in to know that if a recruiting reporter who covers one team breaks another team's player is going to the portal, then you can put two and two together there. So that's really interesting and kind of fascinating. But some of the other reaction, you know, I Stu Mandel from The Athletic tweeted out a good question, and I don't know what the answer is. Is he the best non-quarterback player, you know, to enter the portal, you know, from a real like powerhouse blue-blooded program? It's a big one. And it's kind of like a welcome to the real world for Alabama fans. All of this, you know, everybody else had dealt with this for quite some time at their school, and now, you know, Alabama fans are having to deal with it. It's a dose of reality when you're not at the top, when you don't have the game's best coach ever, maybe coaching your team. These are things that happen. So, good luck.
So here's the tough part, and Washington's going through it also. I think they had 14 transfers in the last week. So in an effort to be fair, the NCAA allows a transfer window to open if your head coach leaves your program for like 30 days. So this late cycle for Alabama, and then there's a window after your final game, I think, 5 days, something like that. I don't know, whatever. But at this point for Alabama, Washington, Arizona, and perhaps Michigan, the window opens, and Alabama now has to sit there and watch everyone in the country try to take their roster. And the window is closed for many other programs, if not all of them. I'm not sure the exact thing, but the further this goes out, the worse it is for the school that loses its head coach. Because look, if this happens on December 5th and all of a sudden 21 guys jump in the portal, Alabama then could sit there with the entire portal in front of them and pick up 21 guys or however many they want. And many of the players that already committed somewhere else would undoubtedly want to go play for Alabama and Kalen DeBoer. They've got a great coach. It's a great place to play. But that option isn't there. So you're getting raided, and then your pool of people you can replace him with is extraordinarily small because of this, what I think is a well-meaning initiative. But if you're Kalen DeBoer right now, I think your options are pretty small. And so you might be sitting there going, well, I can only take Washington, Arizona, and Michigan guys, maybe.
Well, it's in the middle of January, too, by the way. Like, we're a week into
classes.
School has started. Yeah, classes have started, and you're revving up spring stuff. And, it's a...
It's a hardship.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's... We said on the last pod, I think the quarter at Washington started January 3rd. So they're 2 weeks in. Georgia, just FYI, started January 8th. Ad drop supposedly closed on the 12th. I think they might be able to do some adding for Caleb Downs if he shows up on the 17th or 18th. Things happen.
There's another portal window in the spring.
Yeah.
That people can then go, and that's generally people who lose out on their two deep. But it's a tough stretch. I mean, look, you're not going to replace this amount of talent at Alabama. It's just not going to happen at this point. So DeBoer or Jed Fish up at Washington or whatever, wherever this is going to be, is going to have to spend then the spring kind of with the, we'll hire kind of, we're hiring option open, see who comes. So really weird. Again, it's this weird situation of trying to do college sports. The bigger this gets, but like, it's a tough deal for Alabama. I mean, he was 21 guys.
Yeah.
In a week.
Yep. Yeah. No, I mean, yes, they will be hanging the shingle out saying we are accepting transfers. Now the question is, are you going to go ahead and tamper with them behind the scenes? Probably.
Technically probably. Not allowed to tamper, but there's a lot of, got to call the high school. Well, we're a little thin at cornerback. How's Jimmy liking it over there? Tennessee or wherever. I don't know. This is a harder deal, though, for these schools than it previously would have been losing your coach.
Absolutely. Lose a little, lose a lot.
Lose a little, lose a lot. Because, guys go to these schools because of the coach or the system or whatever. And I don't know. I don't know what solution there would be for that.
No. I mean, the only thing, we've talked about this plenty of times, but while I say do not blame the players for playing the same game, I do think the NCAA screwed up by not just having the one-time free transfer and then no waivers, period. And now the waiver thing the transfer window is so wide open that you've totally lost any sense of continuity there.
Well, yeah, and now we're right in the middle of this court case, right, that is challenging the NCAA's rule. And so at least for now, those players who even transferring a second or third time can transfer and play immediately next fall. We've seen some players get in the portal over the last few weeks since that ruling has been made. And Charlie Baker said, the NCAA president said something at the convention to a few of us, a small group of reporters, about this. And I think the words when we asked about the transfer situation was, we're kind of in this for now. We're in this state for now, which is multi-time transfers being able to leave and play immediately without a waiver or anything like that until they get this court situation settled. It's a mess, plain and simple. It's a mess right now. They are negotiating. The in college athletic leaders are negotiating with lawyers, who are suing them over the transfer policy, they're basically saying, hey, if we do this, will you settle? And that's just in one case. They're doing the same thing in the House case too, which is totally separate. And a lot of this stuff was talked about at the convention last week. It's like, man, college athletics is in a wild situation where they are negotiating their rules, right, and their policy changes with lawyers who are suing them.
Never ever should have allowed they should have always forced the 1 year sit out. They never should have created a waiver. They had to hold a hard line on that. At the same time, they had to stop the coaches from prohibiting where a player could transfer.
Yes.
If they'd given ground on that and then held it, they had a chance. But once they went to that waiver, this was inevitable. The four-year transfers is inevitable. They're going to lose. And so here we are. But the sport will go on if Alabama loses 21. But sucks for Tide fans. But yeah, all these players are going somewhere. And again, this is where you get more parity. So
yeah,
if you're overall NCAA, I think this is I wouldn't have allowed this if I was college football. But if you're the NCAA overall, you're going, well, we're still playing football next year. It'll be all right. So it's not Alabama's birthright to go 12-1 every single year as a minimum.
No, this it is not.
How we're going to have to be. Ohio State made a hire at a new athletic director. Gene Smith, legendary career, stepping away, one of the more prominent leaders in college athletics, certainly as a campus guy, is retiring. They hired Ross Bjork from Texas A&M. And I believe that Pat Forty has some thoughts on this.
I do, in fact. Congratulations to Ross Bjork, who has parlayed an incredible career out of a strong jawline and a firm handshake and being good at buzzwords and jargon and overcoming a rather long list of what I would think would be considered missteps as an athletic director. Not necessarily personal missteps, but things he has presided over. The Hugh Freeze scandal buffet at Mississippi, the NCAA sanctions that included a 2-year postseason ban, that included Hugh getting a little dial friendly with his cell phone with escorts, which included Ross Bjork joining Hugh in the disinformation campaign about the NCAA investigations that led to a defamation lawsuit from Houston Nutt, filed by Tom Mars and set Tom Mars loose in the college landscape. There was the hire of Matt Luke to replace Hugh Freeze. They gave him the interim job, and then they said, you know what, 6-6 is so good, we're keeping you. And then he went 15-21, and they fired him. There was the hiring of Kermit Davis Jr., which had one good season in basketball, and then they ended up, the Bjork successor ended up firing him. Anyway, Ross parlayed all of that into the Texas A&M job, which stunned a lot of people because a lot of people were surprised he didn't get fired at Ole Miss. And at A&M, he, of course, presided over the worst contract in history, extending Jimbo Fisher to 2031 and giving him $96 million in guaranteed money and giving him a $0 buyout. Now, that was already written into the previous contract with Scott Woodward, but they extended it. They made it even more ironclad, and they ended up eating $77 million roughly to make Jimbo go away this year. Jimbo also had some NCAA penalties. Buzz Williams, the basketball coach, had some NCAA penalties. And one of Ross's last acts at A&M was trying to hire Mark Stoops and having that slapped back in his face by higher-ups at A&M who said, no, do better. And so he did do better. He went and got the Ohio State job, one of the five best for sure in the business. Incredible. Gene Smith's got these proteges out there, Martin Jarman at UCLA, Heather Like at Pittsburgh, Pat Chun at Washington State. Did they hire any of them? No. They hired the guy with the strong jawline and the firm handshake. So congratulations to Ross Bjork on showing us what a remarkable country and what a remarkable business college sports is.
Pat, tell us how you really feel.
I wish I had gotten some popcorn for that.
I have nothing, no personal animus for Ross Bjork. I'm just surprised at his career arc.
It was a surprising hire. I think a lot of people would, hey, guys, my luggage is lost. Remember, I'm getting a call from the airline. Let me go real quick.
Keep this on the air.
Yes.
See, that on the air. This is it. His vacation, not only does he stick me with all the work last week, he's sashaying down a mountain, it's now bleeding into this week.
Yep.
I don't care about your luggage. We're taping a pod here, Ross.
Ross lost luggage, now using that to get out of the pod.
Back to Ross Bjork. Of all the things you mentioned, oh, he's back now. He's back. Did you get your luggage?
I got it. They found my bag. I have to go pick it up at the airport. Yay. All right. All right.
We're thoughts and
all my toiletries, everything. It was right.
I was picking up the slack as tradition while you were dealing with vacation residue. My thing with Ross Bjork, I don't know him. And I don't know how he'll do. I mean, Ohio State job is a monster. It's like 36 programs. Like Texas A&M only has 20 teams. They got 36 at Ohio State. I think it's the richest one in the country. No ties.
Yeah, biggest athletic budget. Yeah, in the
biggest
country.
Budget. Yeah. I mean, you've got, football and basketball and hockey. There's only a few programs to do all three of those at D1 level. Like, there's just a lot going on at Ohio State. So it's a tough job. I don't know whether to be up for it. My issue with Ross Bjork and with Hugh Freeze has always been the misinformation campaign at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing was to downplay and lie about the nature of the violations to trick recruits, trick your players, trick their families, trick everyone to stay or keep sign a letter of intent under false pretenses to the University of Mississippi. Yeah, straight up lied to everybody. And that was the whole goal. And I know there's lots of NCAA violations out there, and I know the, calling the escorts or whatever is the headline, but the fact that he sat there and devised a campaign to lie to parents and players, and college sports goes, these are the people that should keep getting better and better jobs, is part of the reason why I don't listen to any of these people talk about anything.
Yeah.
That's a dirtbag industry. Like, let's lie to everybody. Hey, let's have an orchestrated campaign to trick everybody.
Mm.
Great. That's the guy. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Bad contracts, violations of this coach, bad hires, they happen. But that plan was one of the worst things I've seen in college athletics, because it was a personal attempt to deceive, and it worked. We will slander Houston Nutt. We will do everything we can just to keep a recruiting class. We will make them sign under false pretense. And these are the people that keep getting bigger and bigger jobs. And there's a lot of people in college sports that get blackballed out of the business because they bought someone a ham sandwich when they shouldn't have. That's the violation, not this.
Yeah.
It was surprising to say the least. I think, and I was kind of following the behind the scenes of the search for the last, especially a couple of weeks. And, early on, a name emerged, Boo Corrigan at NC State, that there was some interest there. And for a while, I actually thought that was going to happen. And then it wasn't. And then you heard, as Pat mentioned, Gene Smith's kind of tree, AD tree, and you heard a lot about Pat Chun at Washington State. And for a while, again, I thought that was going to happen. And then when it didn't, I remember hearing like, no, it's they've gone big fish, fishing again for a sitting kind of big time Power Five AD. And some of these presidents and boards, I think they do want to make kind of a splash, so to speak, and hire somebody from, right, in this case, like the big bad SEC, a big rich SEC school. And I'm assuming that that's kind of part of this, but this is a huge job. 36 sports. I think last year they overtook Texas as the nation's biggest in revenue, their budget. And they have, going into this new era, they're going to have potentially real tough decisions to make with all these sports, because at least according to Charlie Baker's proposal, right, this FBS subdivision, all this stuff, Ohio State would be probably paying its athletes more than anybody in the country because of the amount of sports they have. So it is just a huge undertaking. And I don't know, it was a surprise, that's for sure.
Just real quick, we'll piggyback off what Dan detailed there. I was working at Yahoo, and I broke the story on January 30th, 2016, that they were facing 30 alleged violations from the NCAA. And didn't know the exact breakdown of them, but it was three sports. And the disinformation campaign began very quickly thereafter, spreading to everybody from Ole Miss that most of this wasn't Hugh Freeze. It wasn't related to him. It was Houston Nutt. It was other sports, whatever. And everyone ran with it. And it was an absolute fabrication. It was not true. And it wasn't until late May when that notice of allegations was released. Nobody's like, oh, okay. I, you know, was convinced that Hugh and the current Ole Miss program was on the hook for most of it, but didn't have the details. And then when the details came out, it was a brazen attempt to mislead people into signing in February and then being basically stuck there.
Because the rules were different then, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an orchestrated campaign. It was institutionalized deception designed to fool people. And again, it's and hey, let's reward that. Terrific. But, you know, so-and-so bought a hot dog for this high school recruit at the wrong time. And he's out. 10-year show cost. Speaking of how much money Ohio State has, they may hire Jason Candle, the head coach of Toledo, to be their offensive coordinator. He makes $1.1 million at least at Toledo, is extremely successful. Now, that hasn't happened yet, but there's a lot of buzz on it. We just saw Alabama hire Buffalo head coach, University of Buffalo head coach, Maurice Linguist, as their co-defensive coordinator, and South Alabama head coach Kane Womack as a defensive coordinator, I'm not sure how that's all working out. Last year, we saw Colorado hire Kent State coach Sean Lewis as its offensive coordinator. He's now the head coach at San Diego State. Talk about the money differential between the power schools and everybody else. Like, the big boys are just hiring MAC head coaches and Sun Belt head coaches.
Yeah, we talk about this in a as a play, like a, the transfer portal and how the fear when transfer portal and NIL kind of combined to create this free agency, the fear was that the, you know, the big schools were going to take the best players from the small schools. And we've seen some of that, maybe not as much as people have at first cautioned, but what this is like the coaching version of that. These blue blood power five schools, are able to pay double the salary of his group of five head coaches. And it's tough to not take that. And we've seen, yeah, Dan mentioned Sean Lewis last year. And it feels like there have been a few more, but I don't know that I've ever remember there being, you know, three or four of them in a single cycle, which we may end up seeing here. And it just goes back to the continuously growing gap in revenue between the Power Five and the Group of Five, and even within the Power Five, there is this gap of that continues to grow, and it's quite sad, kind of, right? But we see it work, quote unquote, right? Sean Lewis made the move in order to get maybe a better head coaching job, and he did. After a year, after getting demoted,
yeah,
wasn't on the staff,
wasn't even
yeah. So I'm sure Kane Womack and Mo Linguas saw that too, right? Like, well, I can go get paid more and have a better chance, right, to move on to a better head coaching job at some point. And here we are.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That I think that's the new upward mobility. It's easier to do it. Jason Candle has done very well at Toledo for quite a long time, and he's still at Toledo. And he's probably like, okay, you know, Ohio State, if I go take over play calling there and Ryan Day moves into more of the CEO role and we light it up and we go to the playoff, hey, look out, man. I may finally get my chance at a power conference job. So I think the old rules of how you get those jobs is definitely changing as the salaries change and the expectations. But Bobby Petrino didn't go to Texas A&M because he loved the Corps of Cadets. I mean, he took that offensive coordinator job thinking that that would be his path back to getting a big-time job.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense because if you're trying to build a resume, you know, Jason Candle was from Mount Union, Division III. He spent his entire career in D1 at Toledo. He was an assistant coach at Toledo, and then he got promoted. He's been there 8 full seasons. He's only 44 years old. 8 seasons, never had a losing season. He's a really good coach, coming off an 11-3, 8-0 in the MAC, and, you know, he doesn't get a job this year. Michigan State didn't take him. They went to, you know, they went other route. You know, a Michigan State type program would be perfect to say, hey, we're going to take the really good MAC coach, right?
Yeah.
They didn't go that.
And there were several others. Syracuse, Indiana.
Indiana didn't go that route. Yeah, exactly. Right. Same thing. And that's fine. I'm not saying they picked the wrong guy. I'm just saying that's, you sit there and say, well, if I do well at Toledo, I'll get a Big Ten job. That's been the path. Now he goes, let's say he does go to Ohio State. And I don't know. He may stay at Toledo. We probably shouldn't be speculating about him. But the other guys, Mo Linguist done a good job at Buffalo. He does a good job. And now he say, look, I've been in the major recruiting wars. I've done SEC experience. I also have head coaching experience.
Right.
You know, so you're building out a resume in your 40s and trying to get one of these $10 million a year jobs. I don't blame these guys for doing it. It's not just the immediate money. But it's certainly a very interesting trend that we have not seen until recently. And
well, and these jobs are becoming so different too. Like the G5 head coaching jobs and the P5 head coaching jobs have become so much different in I think in the NIL era, specifically with that, you know. So it's kind of like one of those things, you prove at a P5 you can do all this stuff and you can recruit at that level with NIL and all this stuff. And you might have a better path. I was talking to a head coach who went from a Group of Five school to a Power Five recently. And his first few weeks on the job at the Power Five program, he's like, oh, this is what they're talking about when they all talk about this NIL stuff. We didn't do this. We didn't deal with this at the Group of Five. We didn't have the money to really deal with this seriously. And now I've got all this, and I've got to deal with this. And they've just become different jobs in a lot of ways, specifically in the off season.
Yeah. Well, pretty interesting trend there. Pretty interesting trend there. Okay, Thursday, that will be another congressional hearing. We know we love those are always fun.
As much fun as a cement factory vacation in Boardman.
I'm glad that Ross, fresh off his vacation, is going to cover it. You can sit through that thing. I'm sure the inane questions from politicians who don't understand anything. What can we expect on Thursday's College Sports Hits Capitol Hill? Ross, anything?
Yeah, I think this is the, I can't keep track of it, 11th or 12th hearing on college athletics since, you know, all the NIL stuff started back in 2020, I believe. And this one is in the House instead of the Senate. The last House hearing included a congressman, I believe, dressing up in his Georgia red to support the Bulldogs, and he had a stuffed animal bulldog on the desk. And I think it included another representative from Florida. She had the Go Gator chant going and the Gator hat on. So they're taking this very seriously in the House. So I would expect hopefully this one to be a little more serious, since we're actually talking specifically about a bill. So Gus Bilirakis, who's a representative out of Florida, he's been working on a bill now for several months, and he's been having trouble getting a Democrat to get on the bill with him, mostly because the Democrats disagree with a lot of things in his bill. He updated his bill recently, which I thought fascinating, to include to address employment. You know, athletes will be, according to his bill, athletes should be deemed students and not employees, which is a big part of that. And that's where this hearing's going to go. And that's where these hearings, the last few of them, have gone, including the Senate hearing in the fall, is around athlete employment. And if employment should be addressed, and then, you know, you have two things going here. You have the athlete employment, and then you have the antitrust piece for the NCAA. Those are really the two issues here. It's not as much about NIL anymore. So I would expect the hearing to revolve around those two things. A lot of people think if they can get this bill pushed through the House, which is controlled by Republicans, friendly to the NCAA more so, that they can get this bill out of the House and it'll undergo a lot of changes, right, in a Democratic controlled Senate, but maybe it'll be meshed with the Ted Cruz, Cory Booker negotiations going on in the Senate, and there'll be something there that'll come out of the Senate. That's the hope for those in college athletics. Charlie Baker will be there, the NCAA president, which is, you know, certainly important. This is the second straight hearing that he'll be involved in. But the big things to watch, I'll say lastly, is the argument over athlete employment that we will see. And then the issue with the antitrust and the legal protection for the NCAA. Those are the two most important things. And those are the two things that are slowing an agreement and compromise between Republicans and Democrats. So it's less about NIL, and you're starting to see these hearings not called NIL hearings anymore because it just goes way beyond that now.
Yeah,
that would dovetail with the NCAA playbook, which is, I mean, their goals are to not have employees as athletes and to not get their antitrust protection taken away. So that's why they're pushing hard for Congress to be involved. So this could be Charlie, I'm sure, will be pushing in his element here at this hearing tomorrow.
Just glad we wasted all that time on creating a panic that didn't need to be addressed. That was good. Good job. All right. Quick People's Court.
Okay. Speed round.
Speed round People's Court. And people, you guys got to send me more stuff. I haven't been getting anything lately.
Yeah.
Got to dry up. And the Daily Mail, the Princess Kate is in the hospital. She had a surgery, and they are just, forget it.
Yeah, they've neglected their duty to the news of the weird.
The Daily Mail.
Way too celebrity-oriented right
now. Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's probably a big seller over there. I don't care. I hope she's fine, but I'm guessing she will be. Do we need, like, minute by minute, the patient? Like, come on, Daily Mail. Let's get back to what you do well. But I do have this story. You know, they were serving that Johnny Walker at the national championship game, and now I'm on a Johnny Walker kick, which is not really what I needed, but it's what I got. So you know, Scotch whiskey, so good. There was a recent sale of the most expensive bottle of Scotch whiskey ever, the most sought after. One bottle sold for $2.7 million at an auction in London.
What?
$2.7 million. The Macallan Adami 1926.
Ooh.
So 40 bottles of the Macallan 1926 were bottled in 1986 after being aged in sherry casks for 60 years.
Holy moly.
60-year age, and now it's been bottled. The label has a special thing, all this stuff. So this bottle went for $2.7 million, the most expensive. It got reconditioned. I'm not quite sure how this all worked. They reconditioned, and so Macallan's master whiskey maker, Christine Campbell, gave the tipple a sniff during the reconditioning. So she has smelled it, not tasted it. Because, I mean, what are you paying 2.7? What are you getting in there, right? Obviously, yeah, this could be an investment. Yeah. This could just be money laundering. Or someone might want to drink it, and that's the question we'll get to. Mm. She claims, this stuff always cracks me up, the whiskey contains notes of rich dark fruits, black cherry compote, alongside sticky dates, not just a normal date, a sticky date, followed by intense sweet antique oak, dark chocolate, treacle, ginger. The notes go on and on, she said. It was a very special moment to experience. Now, obviously, you know, they're going to say that. I don't even know what any of that means.
She got that all from sniffing it.
Sniffing it.
Not even tasting it.
I don't even know what a treacle is. I don't know what What is a sticky date? I don't know any of this stuff. Here's the question. You buy it for 2.7 mil. Do you drink it?
If you can afford to buy a bottle of scotch for 2.7 million, yes, I would drink it, because you have so much damn money that who the hell cares? You know, buy a second bottle and keep that one on your shelf if you want. But yes, I want to taste the sticky dates. I don't want to just hear about them secondhand from somebody who sniffed it. I want to taste the dates. I'm opening that sucker.
If you really were ballsy and so rich you didn't know what to do with your money, which anybody buying this probably is, you would crack it open and then pour it on ice and then pour about a half a liter of Sprite in there. Just do a little mixer. Get a little Sprite or Coke in there. Ooh, this is a great cocktail.
Oh, that would be criminal.
Scotch and soda. I mean, it's a very popular drink.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sprite, not
imagine.
Oh my god.
Maybe a little Coke, tonic.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So this was bottled in 1986, huh? So this to commemorate Penn State upsetting Miami in the Fiesta Bowl to win the national championship.
Apparently. Hmm. Apparently. Yeah. 60 years in a sherry cask.
That's unbelievable.
I'm absolutely drinking it. But it would be weird because the anticipate, like, it just be, I mean, 2.7, it'd be almost too much. I wouldn't want to know
the problem is you would have to lie and say it was the best thing you've ever had, even if it wasn't.
Yeah.
Because you just spent 2.7 million on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be bad. I don't know. How much better could it be than just a nice little bottle of Johnny Walker Red? I don't know.
That's the thing. You could say, I mean, you could go down to Costco and get something as good for
little like Pepsi challenge.
Yeah.
Which one? I don't taste sticky dates. I'm not tasting my sticky dates. All right. Send me better crap, people. Let's go. We need to mobilize College Football Inquirer Nation.
Let's go.
Let's go. Be back next week with more. See if Harbaugh is still around. Maybe there'll be an emergency pod. Harbaugh leaves. I probably not. I think we kind of know. It's not going to be a shocker. Let's put it that way. Thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about us, and all the other stuff as the offseason kicks in. We will talk to you later.